Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man, still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Penick. And welcome to the 2024 New York Giants draft recap. I got, like, butterflies. Like, I feel good about this draft. Had a lot of fun through this draft process, Justin. We're going to break it down from round one to round six. You know, from the first round, not getting a quarterback, what that means. Me and you both agreed with how the Giants attacked the first round. And maybe my favorite day three pick that we've ever had since doing this, and Theo Johnson. Justin, I feel good about this draft class, right? And we'll break it down individually. We'll start with, like, the, you know, Malik Nabers, who he is, and him versus, you know, J.J. McCarthy, essentially, is what people had it down to. But Tyler Newbin, right? This guy's an extremely smart player. Day one starter. Andrew Phillips, we'll talk about him. Mm-hmm. Theo Johnson. Right, he was my tight end too in this class. He is someone that I wanted. Right, I was bored watching tight ends this year until I got the Theo Johnson. Tyrone Tracy Jr. like had over 6 yards per carry, only 1 year playing running back. Film breakdowns out, and then Darius Moasau.
Yes.
We got that right. Who, you know, has played under the Giants special teams coach and Michael Gabriel. So, how do you feel about this draft? Because I think we had a lot of fun covering it and gonna have a lot of fun recapping this, because there's good players.
I love it, man. I'm a big fan of this draft class. I kind of had this thought of, you know, the first five picks of this draft, you know, Moasau, whatever, day three linebacker, special teamer. Hey, he'll have an impact day one. New kickoff rules, let's do it.
Yeah, gotta
all
replace
six players, but definitely
gotta replace Cam Brown.
The first five, right? First five players, offense and defense. They're going to have, I think, some sort of impact on this season, right? Rounds, and this is also a current state of the Giants roster, that it has a lot of holes and it still needs a lot of players. So it's like, oh, well.
You know, your first three picks are essentially starters.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? And then we talk, and then Theo Johnson, who's not one, is someone that's,
I think he can be coming very
pick,
soon.
And we could see what happens with Darren Waller. Tyrone Tracy, he's going to get snaps from day one, most likely. And then Darius Moasau is going to be probably a special teams only player.
Day one, though. Day one starter special teams.
Yeah. But Justin, sometimes when we do this draft recap, we forget, oh, yeah, on Thursday night, the Giants picked sixth overall, and they, like, got
10 years ago.
They got LSU wide receiver Malik Nabers, right? Like, this is a amazing player. Like, he's gonna, right, like, the projection is a star player, not like, oh, he's a good player, he's gonna contribute, you know, he's gonna be known around the league. Like, the projection for Malik Nabers is to be a bona fide star. Yeah. In the NFL, fill that wide receiver one hole that the Giants have not had since they traded Odell Beckham Jr. for all pro defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence and a couple other pieces. And that is always a good thing. He was the third best player on my board and a lot of people's boards, Justin, after Marvin Harrison Jr. and Caleb Williams. Giants get him at the sixth overall pick. And I was, you know, when the Chargers were on the clock, it was like, please go offensive line. Take care of your trenches. Take offensive line so we can get Malik Nabers, because he's like, watching him is like, this is like, it's like watching a high, watch going through his film, mm-hmm, was just like watching a constant highlight reel.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just a guy that can attack the deep part of the field. He's going to attack the short. He's going to attack the intermediate. And that's what I'm most excited about. You know, we talked on the Malik Nabers, the first round recap, that he attacks that intermediate part of the field. And I feel like that's the area that's missing most from this Giants offense. The Giants were last in the NFL in plays between 10 to 19 yards last year with 71. And there was a pretty large gap between the teams that were tied for 31st with Tennessee and Chicago. They had 83. So the Giants, I talk about explosive plays all the time, and Malik Nabers is going to be that. But Nabers is also going to be a guy that's going to be able to separate in the quick game and the intermediate game. And
all
it's
three
not,
levels. That's been my line over and over again.
And I think that's
again.
Brian Dable and Joe Shane's line,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Brian Dable. That basically the only, you know, he answered probably two questions on Thursday mm-hmm. night because they all go to Joe Shane. And he's like, deep, intermediate, short. All three levels that this guy is able to attack.
And that's what makes a wide receiver one.
Yeah, and I think he is QB-proof production-wise, right? Can he be productive rookie year and the Giants still not win games? Obviously.
Could he be a little bit more productive if maybe we felt more confident in Daniel Jones throwing a better deep ball as of right now?
Not even throwing a better deep ball. Throwing
it more?
Yeah, throwing a more frequent deep ball. But I think it opens up Darius Slayton and Jalin Hyatt, Wandale Robinson in the slot. So I think it does a lot of things for the team. But let's before we can just read his scouting report that we have for him, Justin, let's talk about just the decision to take Malik Nabers because J.J. McCarthy, they didn't have to trade up, was sitting right there. But we also know, Justin, that the Giants tried hard to trade up the New England Patriots to draft Drake May. Yeah. They offered
Can I say the new information?
Yeah, yeah.
The new information that we have is that the Giants, on draft night for the first round, they tried to trade for pick three, and that would have been Drake May. They tried to trade their sixth overall pick, pick 47, and pick 107 this year, plus 2025's first-round pick. The information that I was operating off of on Thursday, I think when we recorded our first-round recap, is that everything was included except pick 107, and then I learned that the Giants, at the last minute, tried to add pick 107 as kind of just like a sprinkler.
And the Vikings offered three first-round picks, so they just weren't moving off of that pick.
And I believe Robert Kraft, the Patriots hired, and Robert Kraft hired outside consultation, external, and Elliot Wolf, and I think Patriots internally wanted to do it, but then Robert Kraft denied it, which in a way is the right move for the Patriots to kind of get your stud franchise quarterback, you hope, even though the roster does need a lot of work. But the Giants were willing, to bring it back to the Giants. The Giants were willing to give up an absolute haul, a trade that, if you look at the charts, makes absolutely no sense. But for Drake May, and if you really believe in that guy, it does make sense. But that is a steep, steep price to pay. They tried to do it. Joe Shane wanted to get a quarterback. He wanted to get the right quarterback in Drake May, and he gave a haul to try and do it.
Yeah, and the Vikings offered three firsts. Like, I wouldn't do that, right? Like, I would have tapped out it as the first and second, and then next year's first and second. Even then, you feel dirty about it. But Drake, I don't want to repeat our whole draft day speech and stuff, Justin, but I would have wanted to trade for Drake May. I think he is a quarterback that can change your franchise that you build around, right? Like, him being the focal piece, you build around him. But at the end of the day, that just was not an option for the New York Giants. Now, the other option would have been J.J. McCarthy. I won't even say a lot. There was like calls for J.J. McCarthy, and the Giants felt the pressure to take J.J. McCarthy.
They felt the pressure to get a quarterback.
Because, Justin, there's right now the quarterback answer is not easy. No. Like, right now, next year's draft class doesn't have anyone screaming at you. Even if someone does rise, they may not be in that position. Like, I don't think they're going to have the first a top three pick next year.
Yeah, I certainly hope not.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have a top three pick next year. So even if there is two risers, they may not be in the spot to get that quarterback. But like we said, the correct decision was to not draft J.J. McCarthy. Me and you both agree with Joe Shane pre-draft. We were worried that Joe Shane didn't agree with us, but Joe Shane agreed. This guy is not someone that you draft with a top 10 pick, and specifically with the Giants roster, right? Minnesota, I still don't even love it for Minnesota, but I actually think he's going to be productive for Minnesota.
You want to know why? Because Minnesota is a good situation.
It's a great
and
situation.
And the Giants are not a good situation right now.
Yeah. And I don't think he is someone you build around. I think he's someone that you can build with.
Yeah.
And they've already built a lot there. But the right decision was taking the best player available and not forcing quarterback, right? The idea that you just hope, you don't have an answer, just take quarterback. And this idea that, the NFL disagreed. As Joe Shane thinks he's smarter than the NFL, the NFL is desperate for quarterbacks. Yeah. The idea
and that's how you get fired, by the way.
And forget fired. Like, you take risks if you believe in something. But the idea that, because Michael, and by the way, this idea that J.J. McCarthy is a great prospect, Michael Penix went before him, if we're going off of what the NFL believed. Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, and Bo Nix, right? And J.J. McCarthy is the one we like the most out of those. Like, to me, it reminds me of the Cam Newton draft, where Jake Locker, Blaine Gabbert, and Christian Ponder go. Like, I like McCarthy more than all of those guys. But, like, that's what it reminds me of. Like, this year, the teams got desperate to get it, to try and get fix their quarterback needs. So the idea that, like, oh, well, is Joe Shane better hope that none of these guys hit? I trust his evaluation. And was there any draft analyst who said, man, the Giants really screwed up by drafting J.J.
McCarthy?
We've
been listening to a few
today.
I've
been trying to find somebody to see, does anyone disagree with us on this? So the Giants made the right decision. They got Malik Nabers, who is an offense-changing player. Like, he is a piece of the future, right? And we talked about it, this, Justin, for Joe Shane's job security. Landing that franchise quarterback can extend his job security and help build the roster. Obviously, it's the most important position in football. But if that guy's not the franchise quarterback, the next thing you can do is build a good roster. Now, it's not there yet. It's far from there. Mm-hmm. But this is where I am happy, is I think this draft class was a step towards that.
I agree.
And that's,
I hope so.
And that's where I'm happy with this draft class.
Yeah.
Not that this draft class with only six picks is going to change the roster.
No.
But I think with what they did with the six picks, outside of one pick that we'll talk about, I think they took a step forward to getting towards a point where they can just say, hey, we have a good roster. Yeah. Even if the quarterback answer isn't easy, we have a good roster.
Bobby, we were talking about the 2020 draft class and really even the 2020 offseason before we came on here. And think of the 2020 draft class. Andrew Thomas and Xavier McKinney lead off. And then you have Darnay Holmes in the third round and, you know, fourth round, excuse me. And then you have day three picks like Carter Kolf and Cam Brown that stuck, Tay Crowder that stuck around for a couple of years. And we're all three of those guys were successful draft picks for day three guys. If they can replicate that with this draft class, right, where you have first round, Andrew Thomas is a superstar player, one of the best left tackles in the NFL. Xavier McKinney was a starting safety for a long time, for 4 years, and they got paid.
A really good safety.
A really good safety for 4 years. Arguably in a better safety production-wise in a system that was not Wink Martindale's. If they can replicate even just that, right, with some solid day three picks, but you have Malik Nabers, who can become a superstar, Tyler Newbin, who can be a starter for you for 4 years, and then you're really, do we pay him? Do we really want to pay him what he's owed after 4 years? And if they can get supplemental guys throughout?
I think you need, but here's with the past two, I think you need more out of the next three picks, out of Andrew Phillips, Theo right. Johnson. Like, I don't think you can look at, like, the 2020 and aim for that. Like, if that's what it ends up being, then they're not that close to becoming a good right. roster. So,
but I just wanted to use that as kind of like a comparison point, because that was the best draft class the Giants have had in a very, very long time.
Which is kind of sad, but yes.
If they can replicate that, at least even with the first two picks, but then we even, I think we feel better about the one day two, and then the day three picks than we did about, like, compared to the 2020.
Absolutely.
We liked the 2020 day three picks. I think we like this draft class's day picks more.
Theo Johnson. I love the Theo Johnson pick.
Yeah, and especially Tyrone Tracy, too.
The Giants made the right decision in round one, right?
And we learned a lot about Joe Shane, too, by the way.
Yeah, like, I'm happy he stuck to his guns.
Yeah.
Right, and didn't fold to the pressure.
Now, he's
made a mistake in the past, right? But, like, he didn't in this draft class, he didn't fold to the pressure.
Now, I think next year is a very different story, where we're commending him on not being desperate, and we're commending him on not taking a guy just
to force.
That
doesn't make you a great GM, but it's a good decision.
But next year may be a different decision, because next year they may have to get desperate. So, we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully not. Let's talk about Malik Nabers individually as a player, though. We've went 13. That's not that much. First, before we get to that, we put a lot of work into this draft coverage, man, and it obviously slows down. You know, people aren't going to be as interested in OTAs and stuff as we are before the season. My request to you is, hey, if you've enjoyed this video or this podcast, if you're brand new, there's going to be, like, we get a lot of new listeners for this episode. I think it's our second biggest growth episode after the week one game. One, subscribe to the channel,
yes.
Shoot a like, and share. If you're new listeners, I won't say share with a friend, but if you're a returning listener, you're part of the Talking Giants versus the World family, share it with a friend. And if you're a new listener, this podcast is a family, and we welcome you. And I know Justin always says, they don't matter anymore. I like 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star rating. And if there's not enough, I will.
I still want to pass talking Yanks.
Yeah. Who am I going to threaten? You know what?
Dalton.
I'll quit.
Oh.
If we don't get 100 new Apple podcast reviews, I will quit this job. I'm not even joking. You know me. I'm stubborn enough to where I'll quit. So 100 Apple podcast reviews.
And also the company set a goal for us to hit 40,000 subscribers by the end of the year. All right, and that's a little bit more serious.
So subscribe. Subscribe. Oh, my. All right. Let's talk about Malik Nabers, Justin.
You threatened to quit, which yeah, I guess maybe
I guess,
is more
I guess
serious.
Our goal of 40,000 is more important than my living. Round one, pick six, the Giants took Malik Nabers, the wide receiver at LSU. 6 foot, 200 pounds. Had almost 1,600 yards, 14 touchdowns, 17 yards per catch on a 70% catch rate. Justin. I mean, he's gifted, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he can challenge all three levels. I'll be saying that until week one starts, until he starts hitting all three levels. I can't wait for my first tweet of, yeah, three catches in the deep, three catches intermediate, and four catches short.
I can't wait till camp.
I can't either. Justin, the speed is great. It's effortless for him to get the top speed. Like, that acceleration is just A+. Like, anyone who's sitting on their heels, he's running past them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a play, I believe, versus Mississippi State where it's like a 4th and 8, and LSU's just like, let's go for it, right? And they're playing off coverage. They blitz, and Nabers just runs past the guy and scores a touchdown on a 4th and 7 from, like, the 45-yard line. I think the most underrated thing for a wide receiver is their ability to stop. Malik Nabers stops like that. Mm-hmm. He's just a snappy player, right? Getting into breaks. He knows how to use stutter and foot jabs and head fakes. And, like, you know, has a lot of success with the entire route tree. You know, he's going to be moved. Like, I know he had a lot of reps in the slot. I think it was almost 50-50. He's going to be an outside wide receiver in the NFL. They'll move him around, but he's going to be an outside wide receiver in the NFL. You know, he's solid in these contested catch, you know, areas, like where he had all those deep catches this year, Justin. But he also is a yak king. He is someone that you just get the ball in his hands and he'll change the game, right? Like, that is something that the Giants have been missing since Odell.
Yep.
Like, someone that takes an ordinary play and makes it an extraordinary
play.
What
can you do outside of the X's and the O's and the schematics?
Yeah. Somebody that, when your quarterback has made the wrong read, it ends up being the right type of play. Somebody who allows Jalen Hyatt to get that one-on-one coverage on the outside.
Even when a play breaks down.
Someone
right?
that opens up space for guys underneath. Someone that gives you light boxes for your running back.
Oh, look.
Like,
pass sets up the run.
I think this is an A-plus player for me, right? Again, third overall on my big board. Last year, like, who was last year's number one overall player? And I think he probably would have been it, right? Like, I should have done this before. 2023 big board. Who would have been ahead of him? Will Anderson Jr. would have been ahead of him. So he would have been number two on my board last year. Like, okay. It would have been Will Anderson Jr. and then Malik Nabers. This guy's A1, and I'm so excited to watch him play football. I know there's not as much. I know there's not a lot of excitement around the Giants right now, and understandably so, right? The quarterback situation is murky. I don't think we're predicting them to, you know, be a playoff team.
Yeah.
But I'm going to enjoy watching Malik Nabers play on Sundays this year and hopefully for the long haul.
Yeah. Yeah, Malik Nabers had at least one 20-plus yard play in every single game in 2023. 78% of his catches either resulted in a first down or a touchdown. He made 30 missed tackles forced. That was the fourth highest among draft-eligible players. He was first in yards per route run, 15th in yards after catch per reception, 9 TDs of 20-plus yards. That was first. He was second in EPA per route run, second in deep catches, third in deep yards. And, man, I already told you about the intermediate part of the field and the short area part of the field. He was one of the best wide receivers at basically all levels. It wasn't just deep stuff. And I feel like sometimes, you know, maybe guys like Malik Nabers can get the reputation, oh, you're just a deep merchant. No, he can win at all levels of the field, like we said. And you mentioned his stop-start. You watch a lot of these receivers where they stop and they gear down, man, where they're really pumping their arms. There's a lot of wasted energy. They're spending a lot of time. They're spending a lot of time gearing down, and that's not great. It may look like you're moving fast, but you're not actually moving fast. Where Malik Nabers, it almost doesn't even look like he's fully stopping, but it's getting defenders on their heels. I'm really excited for what this guy is going to create, regardless of what's happening at quarterback, but then hopefully the Giants do fix quarterback and I'm excited for what Malik Nabers can do even there.
Hopefully, whenever the Giants are able to address that quarterback position, well, guess what? We have a wide receiver one for him in Malik Nabers.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So,
I mean, do you have anything else on Malik Nabers?
No.
Like, we did a whole episode on him on Friday after then. Like, you know, we don't have to go into all the other stuff, but it's just, it's exciting, right? Like, we looked at him in the way too early draft preview last year. I'm like, this guy is kind of fun to watch. And then he just had, like, he grew as a player this past season and was, it was so, like, I mean, he should have won the wide receiver of the year award over Marvin Harrison Jr. All the numbers were better, even though I do think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a better draft prospect, but he should have won wide receiver of the year, Justin. All right, do you just want to talk about Tyler Newbin?
Yes, please.
All right, round two, pick 42nd. The Giants drafted Minnesota safety Tyler Newbin, who's 6'1", 200 pounds, 32-inch arms. He'll be 23 when the season starts. By the way, Malik Nabers, kind of young.
21 in June.
Justin, this is someone that you actually identified, like, just watching college football, I think, like, the first week of the season. And he's played ball. Like, he's been productive for a while. He's had 12 interceptions the last three seasons for Minnesota. He is such an intelligent player mixed with versatility, which is so huge for the Shane Bowen defense, right? Like, when you look at the Shane Bowen defense, you think about the safeties, right? And that's why one reason, like, Xavier McKinney should be a priority to bring back because of how, one, just how good he is, and then the versatility that he brings. You know, and I was listening to his press conference, and it just shows up on film, like, the things he says, where he talks about how he studies quarterbacks, right?
He prepares, right?
He doesn't just study the route combinations. Like, no, I'm looking for every little giveaway you can get, whether it's patting the ball, whether it's, you know, turning your shoulders towards, like, he is looking for everything. And a lot of guys may say that with him, it shows up because his interceptions are not just interceptions can be a lying stat at times about how good of a player it is. It's not for him. Like, he can figure out what a quarterback's keys are. He'll figure out what the play is out of what formation. And he's like, this is coming, right? And the interceptions are just like, It's he knows, right? And he's not the Ed Reed athlete, but that's like how Ed Reed became not just a great athlete safety, is he knew. Like, he knew what you're running. He knew the way the wide receiver ran out of the huddle, what they were running. And there's plays where it's like, this is not your area. This is not your area, but you knew where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost in a sense goes away from where the quarterback's eyes are to make that quarterback think, okay, he's not in the area. This is gonna be open. And then when he sees that quarterback turn his head, that's when he'll go and undercut plays. I mean, I showed him the film breakdown. And then just besides just doing all of that in zone, like, he's versatile, right? Like, in off-man coverage, I think he's very good. Go watch, I think it's Loveland, the tight end of Michigan. He's, like, projected to be a first-rounder next year. He's really good. I watched a lot of him by watching J.J. McCarthy. Go watch him in man coverage, Tyler Newbin in man coverage. It's in the film breakdown. It's good, right? Like, he stays square with his hips. He's patient. And then in the box, he plays the run extremely well. He'll have a missed tackle from here and there. But he's so versatile. So he's a great fit for Shane Bowen's defense. I liked the safety class a lot. He was safety two for me after Cam Kitchens.
He was safety one for me.
Where he is better than Cam Kitchens is that he's going to be better in the box. And, like, I think he can be – he's shown to be better in man coverage. So Tyler Newman's a baller, dude. Like, he's extremely fun to watch. And you could just tell he's extremely intelligent. And that's why he's been so productive at Minnesota.
Yeah, man, I have some high expectations for Tyler Newbin, man. I mean, you mentioned it, how we talked about how excited we were for Xavier McKinney and Shane Bowen's system and how, you know, McKinney could go back to some of his 2021 production. He walks, and now they add another safety who I'm confident – can be a playmaker for this defense. I'm kind of circling year two. Here's why. Xavier McKinney and Kevin Byard had their really good second years.
McKinney struggled even beginning of McKinney's second year. He struggled, and McKinney's a better prospect
production wise.
Yeah, but the beginning of McKinney's second year, he struggled. Like, he was giving up some big plays, and people weren't realizing because it's just safeties off the screen.
But also here's the difference.
Then he just figured it out and took off.
Here's the difference between McKinney and Byard as prospects. McKinney and these Alabama safety slash corner, you know, nickel corners, they don't play like a conventional safety role at Alabama. Whereas Tyler Newbin, you know, in this Antoine Winfield line, which, by the way, I'm buying into this, by the way. I'm buying into the whole, like, T. teammate of Antoine Winfield, played behind him, saw how he worked, and then he found his own success and was a leader in his own right, and he's also wearing number 31. Like, I love that shit. Like, the wearing number 31 thing, I know it's like a fan thing. I love that. Antoine Winfield was one of our
basketball number.
Was one of our favorite players to watch in the draft a couple years ago, and I've loved watching him in the NFL even more, and how he's just a playmaker at all facets in the run game. He gets a lot of sacks because he's in the Tampa Bay defense that blitzes a lot. Todd Bowles. And now in the NFL, he's just super awesome. One of the best safeties in the NFL. So I think, I don't know if Tyron Newbin's going to be that, you know, with all those sacks and like the box score stats that are stacked everywhere. But I do have those kind of expectations in Shane Bowen's defense for Tyler Newbin. And I don't feel bad about it. And I think he can do it. And I think Bobby, Kevin Byard was a guy that didn't miss a snap in his second and third year and then played 96 to 99% of snaps the next 4 years. Xavier McKinney played 97% of the snaps in 2021 and then 100% of the snaps last year. I'm anticipating that the Giants are in a spot where they're going to need Newbin to do the same for them, possibly even right away.
Oh, he's going to be the starter day one.
But not
right
even
away.
Just starter. I'm talking about if you're healthy, we have a chance that, I mean, okay, you may miss a couple snaps here and there, but you like not come off the field guy.
Yeah. He'll be a full-time player. Now, you mentioned, talked about year two, and I think this is important to mention for all these guys. Like, mm-hmm. when we're talking about how they played in college, right? Yep. And we all also are projecting, but we're not projecting them to be what we're saying day now, one. Like, yeah. they have to grow into it. It's more like, hey, what are you year two, right? Like, I think year two, you get a good read.
But also, Newbin has so
except
much.
Except for Neighbors. I think Neighbors is going to be a day one, like, production type of guy.
But he has so much. He's like a four-year starter, though. That's the thing, right? So a lot of college experience.
23 years old when the season starts.
Yeah, so obviously not expecting his ceiling to be hit his first year.
I mean, Antoine Winfield was great his first year.
He was, man. So I'm. You know, hey, it's the draft recap pod. We just drafted this guy. I didn't think he'd fall to pick 47. I had him as safety one. I thought that there was a chance that he could go in the first round simply because he is the best safety. And I'm sure there is a team out there that needs a safety. I'm excited, man. I'm excited. And the key word that I used when talking about safeties this year, the phrase that I kept going back to was anticipate versus react. He anticipates. He doesn't react. He doesn't wait for something to happen and then goes. He anticipates. So I'm all in. I love him.
Yeah, Newbin. We talked about him on our safety preview. He's just an extremely intelligent player.
I have a question for you.
He's not just playing his responsibility. He's getting to the spot. Like that, you know, there's an interception I did in the film breakdown where it's cover two, which is the two high safeties, right? So you're playing half of the field. And he's got a vertical that he has to play. He's playing the half the field, and the other side is running a post, and the post should be open. He comes all the way to the other side and makes that interception. So there's just so many, like plays that you just don't see safeties make. No. Like, really, the only other guy who made similar plays in this class is Cam Kitchens.
Yeah.
And even his, like, Newbin's are a little more, like, high IQ plays where Cam Kitchens are just a little more instinctual.
And I think Newbin's a better athlete,
I think Cam is a better athlete than Newbin.
And I think Newbin is more versatile, but you already acknowledged that.
Yeah, Newbin's going to play in the box better.
Yeah, for sure.
He's a more disciplined man right now.
I have a question for you. I'll read some safety stats that I have. 20% forced incompletion rate. That was 98th percentile in forced incompletion rate. And then a 32% completion rate allowed. This is from Doug Analytics. His favorite stat about safety Tyler Newbin. 77 zone coverage snaps per reception allowed. That was first in this class. He also had 5, 7, and 9 pass deflections the last 3 years, ended this year with 9. 23 in June, 0 coverage penalties over the last 2 years, and I think he has some special teams experience too, if you care about that. Here's my question for you. So you mentioned cover 2, and I think he played a lot of cover 2 at Minnesota based on just what I read. Tell me how he's going to fit into a mainly cover one and cover three scheme that Shane Bowen runs.
Well, Shane Bowen operates from two high systems and rotates the safeties back and forth. Like, you got to be a smart safety to play in Shane Bowen's scheme. I mean, he's not like the center field rangy guy. Mm-hmm. But again, safety is the position where I always talk about, like, does athleticism matter? Absolutely. But the 4-4 safety who doesn't know how to process and is slow to react
will play slow.
Is a second slower than the 4-6 safety.
Yeah.
And so, like, can he play center field? Yes. Will he go down as the best center fielder ever? No, but he can play center. He can play center field, and he did it at Minnesota. Now they would shade him from, you know, even when he'd be the only deep safety, they would shade him to certain sides. So I think they're going to kind of just use him like a chess piece. The other thing, Justin, I want to talk about is with safety. What do you think of the idea of why would we take another safety in the second round if we just don't plan to re-sign them?
I think that's, in a way, that's a good process because if you identify a position that you don't want to overpay and overassign value in terms of salary cap, then just keep drafting them where you have them cheap for 4 years. And if you feel like you can identify them and develop them, I think that's good process.
Well, here's where I don't think it's some grand big picture thing. One, we're talking two different regimes that have let a safety walk. One, right. Landon Collins should have been let to walk, right? He was pigeonholed into a box safety role. He got an insane contract and he fell off, right? It was easy to see that. With Xavier McKinney, we should have resigned Xavier McKinney if we didn't have the Daniel Jones contract on the books, right? Like, say we didn't re-sign Daniel Jones and we had, you know, an extra $46 million of cap space this year.
And then you also trade for Brian Burns.
There would have been no excuse to not re-sign Xavier McKinney. I don't care about positional value. He should have been back on this team for that contract he got by Green Bay. The other one is if, even with the Daniel Jones contract, if they didn't go out and trade for Brian Burns, who's a high-level player at a more important position of edge, right? Like, so if they didn't trade for, you know, their second and at a fifth round pick swap or a next year's fifth and a fifth round swap this year for Brian Burns, and they didn't re-sign Xavier McKinney, I would have been pissed. But they went and got, like, they replaced him with edge, and that's something we talked about, you know, pre-free agency. But pre-free agency, we didn't realize a guy like Brian Burns was
on the way,
was available. So I don't view that as like up some grand, wow, we just don't believe in paying safeties. One, we have two very different GMs that let guys walk. Also, I think it's a little different, and this is something I don't like about GMs sometimes, is they're just a lot more comfortable letting guys they didn't draft walk. So, one, hopefully we're not in a position where we have a different GM when it's time to pay Tyler Newman. But he's also got, like, to play his way into a contract like that, too. Like,
but also,
this is 2 days after the draft. So
we also see good teams do this all the time, Bobby. They identify certain positions, and they...
The difference is the Giants roster is not good, and they shouldn't let good players walk.
I'm trying to think of an example of, like, the Patriots with cornerbacks. Now, I understand the Patriots are in a really bad... They're a really bad situation right now, but when they were good and when they were winning games, you know, they would develop safeties, they would draft safeties, they would let them go, let them walk, they would get paid elsewhere. J.C. Jackson, did Malcolm Butler ever leave? Who was the guy for the Cowboys? Stephon Gilmore. I mean, that's one example. The Ravens, I think, sometimes do this with edge rushers. So, yeah, man. There's teams do this sometimes, but I don't have a major. I like Tyler Newbin. I'm very happy with that pick.
Why don't you talk to us about something before we talk about round three?
Yeah, stay tuned for round three. DraftKings, hello. The 82-game preseason is in the books. Go New York, go New York, go. And it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook. Did you see that Jalen Brunson absolutely took over the game? An official sports betting partner of the NBA from the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook. They have you covered. Same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Hart didn't even score a single point, but he had a million rebounds.
Orlando Magic about to go up 3-2 in the series.
No way. I saw one game they got defeated by 50.
Okay, now it's 2-2.
No way. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code WORLD. New customers get bet $5 and get $200,000 bonus bets instantly. That's code WORLD. Only on DraftKings. The crown, guess what? It's yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in West Virginia. Visit www.1800GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem with gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball. For eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms of responsible gambling resources. Bobby Skinner, you'll be glad you did.
You'll be glad you did. B-ball. All right, Justin, round three, pick 70. The Giants pick Kentucky cornerback Andrew Phillips, 5'11", 190 pounds. 31.5-inch arms, had a good combine, a 40, a time of 4.48, 42-inch vertical, 22 years old. Do you want to talk about him as a player or the decision to draft him over other players first?
Let's talk about him as a player because that's the context for decision to draft him over players.
Okay, so let's talk about some numbers, right? This past year in 12 games, he gave up 67% of his passes, 38 completions, 7.6 yards per attempt, not completion, three touchdowns, zero interceptions, and six pass breakups. So I will go through my scouting report on him. There's a good positive. And I have him graded as a high third round. Now, high third round corner is not like an endearing grade. He's a talented quarterback, but my first note is kind of if you ask me one sentence on him, I'd say he's a talented cornerback who needs to figure out a good amount. He's got good long speed and does his best to not get beat over the top, although there is times where he does get beat over the top. His change of direction and burst, his transitions are smooth and good. He's physical, right? He plays physical. Like, he does a good job to, like, press and gather. But despite the athleticism, he gives up a lot of catches. The numbers show that. Like, in off coverage, Justin, he is just way too over-influenced by not giving up the deep pass, which gives up throws underneath, right? Even though he has the quickness to close cushion. Like, he has that ability. He doesn't do it very often because he is just kind of playing on his heels a lot. And when he's in press man, he can be really handsy at the stem, and he just doesn't win at the catch point, right? There's times where he's in good coverage position and guys are just able to make big catches over him. And when he's playing like in zone coverage but closer up, he gets his hips turned and gets, Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers and Ricky Pierce. Like, those guys were routing him up pretty damn well. And then in the run game, he's competitive. Like, he plays it hard, but he is a bad tackle. He had a 22% missed tackle rate, and it shows up on a game-by-game basis. Now, Joe Shane said he's going to play nickel cornerback in his press conference, and I trust him at that. That would leave Flott on the outside or whoever, right? But we're out, it's a very weird cornerback room right now. I know you have some, stuff on this. Justin, I have a high third on him, but where I disagree with this pick is I think they should have drafted Christian Haynes, right? They didn't draft an offensive lineman. And right, you say, well, they need a cornerback. They've drafted a lot of offensive linemen. Well, right now they've drafted the same amount of corners as they have offensive linemen, with a first, now two thirds, and a six-round pick in Trey Hawkins, which I think Trey Hawkins is a much more valuable draft piece than Marcus McKeithen was as a fifth-round pick. And the offensive linemen that have been drafted haven't worked out, right? So I don't – pass guys not working out is not a reason to
put,
like,
more of a reason.
If all those guys had – or if two of those three guys had worked – like, Evan Neal is a huge question mark. Yeah. A huge question mark. John Michael Schmitz, I do think, is going to figure it out, but he did have a bad rookie season. And Josh Azudu, I don't think, should be factored into any decision for the Giants' roster building. And right now, they may have a tackle playing guard, right? Like, I put up a poll – of, like, who should the Giants start at guard outside of John Runyon, opposite of John Runyon Jr.? And 75% of the answers were Jermaine Elmenor or Evan Neal. And the other options are Josh Azudu and Aaron Stinney. Like, you can say, oh, they went and got offensive line in free agency. They did go get John Runyon Jr. Now, that wasn't a big money guard either with the guards that were out there. They kind of half-assed guard in free agency. Now, I love the Jermaine Elmenor signing. I love that. But again, he is a tackle. And there's a good chance he wins the starting tackle spot, and you can't just put Evan Neal at guard. So, one, it was a huge need, and I think Christian Haynes is a better player. I think Cooper Beebe was a better player. That is my worry about Joe Shane after this, is that he doesn't believe in, like, just building the trenches continuously, right? Like, he's got to plug needs. He's had the plug needs with Evan Neal at right tackle. He needed a guard and Josh Azudu, needed a center. Like, last year's draft was very risky going into it with no center on the roster and then having to draft John Michael. Like, if John Michael Schmitz went off the board at pick 56, like, they're in a tough spot.
Remember the Bears? Did the Bears trade up?
Yeah, the Bears traded up.
They took Tyreek Stevenson, a player that we like and is good.
But we already drafted a corner.
But we were worried on that draft stream saying that the Bears might take John Michael Schmitz and they would have been starting Ben Bredesen.
Right now, and yeah, they let Ben Bredesen walk for a very cheap contract, which I don't think they should have done. So right now the Giants will have a starting guard who is either a backup tackle or just a non-good player in Josh Azudu or Aaron Stinney. Yep. I don't care if they got a new offensive line coach. Those guys right now are bad players. And Christian Haynes would have made this like, is if they drafted Christian Haynes, we would be like,
I would have popped champagne in this room.
Is this a real life draft?
I would have popped champagne in this room.
Yeah. Like, is this a real life draft if they went and got Christian Haynes? So that's where I am. This is right around the slot I think Andrew Phillips deserves to go in the NFL draft, even though I do have concerns about him, you know, giving up all these catches. Yeah. But Christian Haynes, I think Christian Haynes should be in consideration for the second round pick, let alone falling here and not taking
him. You took
him
47th in your mock draft. Let me talk about Andrew Phillips first before, and then we'll circle back to offensive line. I think Andrew Phillips is my least favorite top 100 pick that the Giants have drafted since we've done this. And I'm talking like draft reaction right after it's happened, right? Like I don't think this guy's, I'm rooting for him to be a good player, and I'm rooting for this to really come back to bite me in the ass and be like, Justin, you're wrong. You're such a fucking idiot. Andrew Phillips is about to get a second contract with the Giants and be really good. But man, I somehow like him even less from when we talked about him during the cornerback the draft preview. Because I started off with my notes saying very high completion rate this year. Doesn't turn his head to play the ball. When the play breaks down after 3 seconds, so does he. Yeah, he's a physical player that brings pop. High missed tackle rate. Really high missed tackle rate. 0 interceptions in 2 years. He only has 10 pass deflections over the last 2 years. 5 pass deflections in 2022. 5 pass deflections in 2023. So I see a guy that has a high missed tackle rate that isn't a very good tackler. I see a guy that doesn't have good ball production. And I see a guy that doesn't really turn his head to play the ball. Plus, he could be hand. Like, I just, I don't see a good, I see an okay college player.
He's an athlete, right? So, but
he relies on that too much. And I don't even think he's that great of an athlete.
And here's the thing, we always like convince ourselves, like, oh, we're going to coach him up and he's going to be like, that just is not, like, we always do that. And it, 9 times out of 10, that just doesn't happen. And here's the other thing. I am not like, well, how did we not get an offensive lineman, right? Like, just, oh, like, you had to pick offensive lineman, right? Like, you did a really good video looking at the offensive lineman picked after each of the Giants draft slots.
Now, here's the interesting part of it, because it's not this
third-round slot where the players met the pick.
So I'll run through it now. I have more notes that why I don't like Andrew Phillips, and I have some notes why I like Andrew Phillips, too, if you want to go through it. I don't want to just totally
go through it.
All right, so let me just finish my Andrew Phillips thoughts, and then I'll get back to my main thoughts on offensive linemen. I think Andrew Phillips can be a much better man coverage corner than zone corner. So many times at Kentucky, they had him playing off coverage, and he allowed a lot of stuff underneath. Now, is that part of the issue with Andrew Phillips?
I agree with that take 100%.
Is it part of the problem with Andrew Phillips that he doesn't react soon enough? And this is where I think he relies on his athleticism too much. He thinks that he can just get there. He thinks, oh, I can give this cushion. I can allow all this space. But then when guys run these hitch routes or they allow in-breaking routes, he doesn't close the space enough in time. And a lot of the times, the ball doesn't even come near him. And he's late to flip his hips. He's late to get there. There was one pass deflection that he had in the Georgia game where I'm guaranteed this counts as one of his 5 pass deflections from 2023 as Bobby dies, but I'm on a roll right now. One of the 5 pass deflections that he had in 2023 against Georgia where I actually think the receiver wins the play, but the quarterback takes a while for the ball to get out of his hands, and then Andrew Phillips eventually closes the space and makes a nice play on the ball. But I don't know if I grade that play as something that's really positive. I think he's a bad tackler. There are times where
it's the numbers show he's a bad tackler.
I'm going to continue why. I think even the times where he shows aggressiveness, I don't think he wraps correctly. I think he grabs, and I think he tries to twist. There are times where he's diving for ankles, and he puts his head down, and then running backs with good contact balance are just going to go right off of him. I like him in man coverage. He only had 8 targets in man coverage.
He loses at the catch point in man coverage.
And there was a huge contested catch opportunity that a receiver had in the Florida game where good coverage, sticky, going down the field. Receiver goes up, and I don't think he's overly big. Receiver goes up to make the catch, makes it right over Andrew Phillips, and the ball's placed down at the 2-yard line. It's like a 40-yard play. He only had 8 targets in man coverage, 43 targets in zone. And that for those 43 targets in zone, it was the 5th most in the nation among this year's draft eligible players. And I think that system doesn't fully fit him best. But I do think in man, even though, hey, he can lose at the catch point, I do think in man, he's sticky. I think he can be aggressive at the line. He could show some pop. He can mirror these guys well in man, but it's just zone coverage that I'm really worried about him. He's late to react to shit, and he's only started for the last 2 years. He's 22 years old, so he's not too old, and he's not too young. I don't know, man. I see an okay college player that had zero interceptions and zero ball production in college. If you're an okay college player, I don't know how I see a path to be a good NFL player.
Yeah, it's a huge projection, and that's tough to do with an early third-round pick. Especially at corner, which is such a hard position to transition to the NFL.
I hope I'm wrong, by the way.
Well, yeah, obviously.
But I feel strongly about
But it's not even just him. Again, I have a high third. So, right, like, in a real world, like, this is a slot where it's going for him. But, again, it's also like a swing, like, as a high third. Because I do think he's pretty damn talented. Not the most talented player in the world, but he's pretty damn talented. But it's just offensive line maybe not best player available for them.
Yeah.
But you had to be right in that area, and it's the most important. I mean, look at how bad the offensive line was for the New York Giants last year. Yep. Look at how bad it was, and the fact that depth matters, right? Last year showed how important depth was.
Fucking depth matters.
But right now, it's not even just depth. There is the starting guard right now, the best available player to start a guard, may be their second best offensive tackle.
Quality is even more of a question than depth right now.
Yeah.
Quality is even more of a question.
Don't talk to me about Austin Schlottman and Aaron Stinney and Matt Nelson. Like, those are minimum contracts that we just see offensive line next to their name and are like, oh, there goes depth.
Don't talk to you about them. I looked at the Giants depth chart today and there were three names that I had no idea who the fuck they were. Let me do this because this is the exercise that I did today. I looked at the Giants second round pick, third round pick, and fourth round pick. Where first round, we're good with Malik Nabers. I'm not slamming the table for Joe Alt. I'm not slamming the table for an interior offense. Like, we like Malik Nabers. We know the players that were taken in the first round. We're good with that. So and day three guys, yeah. Could I really get mad that they didn't take fucking Bo Limmer day three? Yeah, but I'm not going to say
day three offensive linemen are probably not going to pan out anyway.
You're also not forcing a position day three. You take the best player available on your board, and this is even arguably for round four, but especially rounds two and three. I think somewhat positions of need should be somewhat considered. It's not the whole thing.
But there was good players there.
Round two. I'm not even going to name the names. I'm only going to name the names for round three. Round two, Tyler Newbin was the correct player to take because there were a couple other players that were taken after, offensive linemen that were taken after him, and Tyler Newbin is I view as better than all those guys. Zach Frazier, Patrick Paul, Blake Fisher, Roger Rosengarten. I did name the names. Round three, pick 70, Andrew Phillips. Here are the offensive linemen that were taken off the board after Andrew Phillips. Isaiah Adams, pick 71 to the Cardinals, who I liked. Cooper Beeb, Dallas. I would have taken Cooper Beeb over Andrew Phillips. And then there were three guys that went to the Bears, the Raiders, and I just lost my page. Hold on. There were three guys that went to the Bears, the Raiders, and the Colts. And then Christian Haynes went to the Seahawks at pick 81.
Yeah, 11 picks later.
So this is the scenario where round three, pick 70, made total sense for them to go offensive lineman. And Cooper Beeb and Christian Haynes were two players that undoubtedly I liked a lot better than Andrew Phillips. And round four, pick 107, Javon Foster, Tanner Bordellini, who I did not like, Mason McCormick, and then Giovanni Manu went to the Lions at round four, pick 126. I obviously prefer Theo Johnson 107 over the offensive linemen that were taken after Theo Johnson.
Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with
you. So round three, pick 70 was the spot, and really the only spot where you can really get mad and criticize that they didn't take offensive linemen. Giants were the only team in the NFL to not add an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman in the NFL draft.
Right, and they do need defensive line help, but it's like they only had six picks, right? So they weren't going to get out there with all their knees.
Right.
But
they also used the early second round pick for Brian Burns.
But round three set up so perfectly to take an offensive lineman, right? There was second round graded players there in the third round. And I truly think we're going to go look back at this and be like, man, that was a mess up. Let's pick up the vibes though, Justin.
Yes. 100%.
With round four, pick 107. Because this is my highest rated day three pick the Giants have made since we started doing this. And that's Theo Johnson, tight end out of Penn State, 6 foot six, 259 pounds, ran a 4.57 40, a 40-inch vertical. He's only 23 years old. Justin, do you have the relative athletic score? Even though we don't really use relative athletic score,
I'll look it up.
Like crazy stuff. Like he is an athlete, right? With that, just that perfect Y tight end size, but he also can flex out of the formation out into the slot.
9.93
out of 10. That's pretty good. This is somebody, Justin, like I said, when I was watching tight ends, and I'm like, this is a boring class outside of Brock Bowers. And then Theo, you know, like that Instagram reel where it's like all the kids and they suck at singing, and then the one kid comes in and is great. That was Theo Johnson for me in this tight end class because he was my tight end too. And it's just, you have a great combination of size, athleticism, and understanding of playing the tight end position. Right now, there's stuff that has to be cleaned up. But he is someone who stretches the field vertically, right? And he had bad production, right? Like, his numbers are not good.
Penn State's not good.
Penn State drove me nuts. They never designed anything for him. I hate their offense.
Yes.
But stretched the field vertically, right? Was able to go make some big catches. Now, the one thing that I think his biggest negative for me is that despite the size, he's not the best contested catch guy in the world. He has some really nice ones, but he's not the best guy at that. But here's where he stands out for me and stands out for other people that I saw put him as their second tight end in this class, is that he's not just a big athlete. Like, in fact, I usually hate those guys, right? Where it's like they get hyped up, they're big, they're athletic, and then you watch them play and they're like, they're not good.
Right.
They're not good, but they're going to get overdrafted because someone thinks, I can fix him. With Theo Johnson, I think it's just he needs some polishing. He doesn't need fixing. He needs some polishing because he can actually run some routes.
Yeah.
Right? He knows how to separate. The film breakdown on him, it's probably the longest I ever spent on a draft film breakdown because I wanted to show like all those little facets of the game.
He does subtleties that you don't see other tight ends do.
Yeah, like he knows how to win leverage. And this was even facing up against corners to get open on slants and in routes. He knows how to like get open in the red zone. He knows how to, you know, push off and tempo his routes and burst out of them. And as a blocker, like his blocking technique is great. He needs a little more ass kicker to him, but his blocking technique is great. Justin, I showed it to you.
Yeah.
There's a pass protection rep against JT Tulumulu. I can't remember his name, who's projected to be like a first-round pick in next year's draft out of Ohio State.
It was a legit pass blocking rep and set.
And this is a guy who, like, guess who Joe Alt and Olu Fashion, whose worst film was against? That guy. And Theo Johnson just has like, oh my gosh, this is a great pass set for him.
That edge rusher is probably thinking, like, I'm probably going to whip this dude's ass right now.
It's crazy.
And then he's like, oh, shit, I'm not.
Yeah, so he's like, Chris, like, now there is, like, and he has smooth transitions. Now, there's all of this stuff shows up on film. But there is, like, 30 to 35% of the time where his routes can be a little predictable and the DB or safety or whoever's covering him is able to stay in the hip, right? So we want to be a down-in, down-out type of player, but this guy, man, when I saw him, I was like, I want him. And I was like, we're not going to get him. I know Darren Waller's retiring, but there's needs on this team. And I think Shane's been a little bit of a need-based drafter. Like, I wanted Theo Johnson, right? And then I'm like, he's projected to go in the fourth round. And then I see people starting to rank him a little higher, you know, like a tight end two, 50th overall, 55th overall type of guy.
Brugler had him 80.
And he was... When we woke up, you know, went to bed after on Friday night, he was there. And I was like, he's staring at me. He's one. And every Friday night when we go to bed, there's a player we want, and you just never get him, whether he gets picked or somebody else picks him.
And there was a run, by the way, at the start of that fourth round. There was a run of players that
we really liked.
And to end day two, there was like a lot of players like, oh, I don't really know him. And then the NFL kind of woke up Saturday morning and was like, all right, let's start taking some of these media consensus guys again that we know and love, and that, you know, at least the value met where they were supposed to be picked, and Theo Johnson was one of them, man.
Yeah, so I'm so thrilled to have him on this team. Now, he's not going to come in and produce right away, but I'm so excited to see what he gets to, because I truly believe in this guy as a player. Like, I think the ceiling is very high for him.
All right, so I, you know, it's funny that you mentioned ceiling, because I asked you because I had a lot of trouble before I watched your film breakdown and before you watch more. Had a lot of trouble digesting, like, okay, I see the combine stuff. You see the athleticism score. You see the RAS, and then you see what he did at the combine and the percentiles that he meets there, even with his body, too, his height, weight, arm length, etc., hand size. But I asked you, okay, so what do you think the ceiling is? You love him so much. What do you think the ceiling is? And you came up with an answer. What is that answer?
So I hate the word ceiling because everyone's like, hi, like, Andrew Phillips, his ceiling is Adoree Jackson or whatever, you know, like people,
Brian Branch.
Like his ceiling is sky high because he's that size, he's that athletic, and he knows how to play football, right? So like, I could give you this crazy ceiling, but it's like, I like to give, like, here's my, like, what I think his realistic ceiling is. He can go above this, but this is what I like positively project. And I think it's Cole Kmet, right? Who's not the best tight end in the NFL, but he's really damn good. He just got a big contract from Chicago. He puts up a lot of production. He's trustworthy.
Yeah,
and I think he can be better than Cole Kmet. But like my realistic like ceiling expectation for him is Cole Kmet.
The last 3 years, Cole Kmet got 60 catches, 50 catches, and then 73 catches. He had a really high catch rate this past year. 15 career touchdowns. Had 7 and 6 touchdowns the last couple years. So yeah, If we can get a tight end, like, and I'm one of those people, man. Or if you have an elite tight end, great. And if you find an elite tight end, great. I feel like a lot of that seems to be a little bit of chance because Kittle's just taken late.
But
right?
Those guys go late,
right?
And there's going to be more guys. And this is where I do get a little carried away with the ceiling. And this is a clip that we posted before the draft when we did our tight end preview, and I said, you know, we have these tight ends who they go in the fourth round, fifth round. We look back and they're stars. Like you mentioned, Kittle, Kelsey, guys like that. And I was like, if there is someone in this class that we look back at, it's going to be Theo Johnson, right? So this isn't just like, oh, Giants picked this guy. Look at his RAS score. He's the ceiling sky high. No, this is like before the draft when I didn't think the Giants would ever take a tight end in this class where I had these thoughts about him. So I'm excited. Obviously, I'm putting big expectations on him, so if he falls short, I'm going to be really disappointed, but I'm so happy about this pick.
But if he winds up being a tight end that gets you set, you know, around 60 catches a year, a couple touchdowns with a catch rate that isn't, that's, I would say, above around 65%, that's a plus.
Absolutely.
That's a huge
awesome
plus.
Awesome fourth-round pick.
You know, even though it's not, you know, Kittle, yes, yeah, obviously. Obviously, so... Yeah. I'm all for it, man. I love the way that he blocks the pass blocking rep brought back shades of Levine Toilolo.
Yeah, he made us talk about Levine Toilolo today. How about that?
Yeah.
All right, round 5, pick 166. This seems to be everyone else. Well, people like Theo Johnson, but this seems to be like maybe outside the Giants, like, you know, fan base, analysts, coaching staff, whatever.
Running back. A lot of numbers on running backs.
Round 5, pick 166. This is end of the fifth round, too, because this was the pick swap with the Panthers where they got this pick from the 49ers in the Christian McCaffrey trade. Tyrone Tracy Jr., the running back out of Purdue, 5'11", 210 pounds. Another high relative athletic score guy, Justin, ran a 4.4 at 40, 40-inch vertical, good agility testing. He's new to the position, right?
Yeah. He's had an interesting path.
He's only, yeah, and I'll let you tell the story of that, but he's only played 1 year of running back after being a wide receiver out of Iowa and transferring to Purdue. You know, I have my film review out on him. I do have worries about him, right? I don't think this is slam dunk guy's going to be
RB1.
Running back one, good running back in the NFL. But there is, the ability is there, right? Like he's an athletic guy who I think has solid vision. And out of these backs, his blocking's, like I put blocking in there, it needs to be cleaned up, but he at least like, finds the right assessment and brings pop for like the first, second half. He just needs to slide his feet a little better. I can't believe I'm talking about blocking so early in this. And then the number, like the advanced stats are really good, right? They're over really 6 good. Yards per carry. Now only had 113 runs, but he has very light tread on him. Now he's going to be 25 by the end of the season, so he's an older player. You know, like when it's a clean read, he's batting 900 and he's able to make guys miss. Not a strong runner or anything. My worry with him, though, Justin, is that Purdue's offensive line actually did some good running blocking for him. Mm-hmm. And like I said, when the read is clean, he bats 900, he makes guys miss, he creates explosive runs. But whenever the read wasn't clean, I saw him look to bounce.
Yeah.
Right? So you see good vision, but when it was really muddy, it wasn't as good. And with the NFL and the New York Giants specifically, it's gonna be a lot more muddy than what it was at Purdue.
And the optimistic talking point I'll respond to you with: he's only been a running back for 1 year.
But that's not even though. Like he's only been a running back for 1 year, right? So it's you see running backs who aren't new to the position when even when it is a clean read, it's like you're screwing this up. Mm-hmm. You're screwing this up. You're you know, and there and there's guys who I have rated higher, like Jalen Wright. Like Jalen Wright is someone that I like who went higher. I had a high grader. But I worry about Jalen Wright. I think he has bad vision. You know, Will Shipley out of Clemson, I think he has bad vision. Where Tyrone Tracy, like, I think he, for being new to position, has pretty damn good vision.
Yeah, his journey.
Patience, like, he has patience, too. He's not just full speed all the time. So, this is, I'm not sitting here proclaiming this guy's slam dunk running back one, but it is a good pick.
No, for day three, I think this is tremendous.
End of the fifth round.
Tremendous value. His journey is quite interesting, where he started out at Iowa for 4 years. 2018, he had his redshirt year. And I'm pretty sure, even at Iowa, they told him to start his Iowa career, we want you to play running back. And he said no. He wanted to be a receiver. So then he transfers to Purdue in 2022. He was a wide receiver in 2022. Had 28 catches for 198 yards. And they asked him, we want you to play running back. And I think he even said no again. But 2023 started to become a running back. He's like, all right,
stubborn.
I'll finally do it.
He just like me for real.
But his fucking sixth year in college, he's like, all right, I'll do it. And he was really good. And also, you know, I don't want to, like, you didn't mention it, but I think the fact that he was a receiver for literally so long, and he does have 113 career receptions.
And so
that's legit.
I went and watched a little bit of his receiver film. It's kind of frustrating that Purdue, they didn't use him. Like, all one, he doesn't have a lot of catches. And two, it was all just swing pass. Like, why didn't the Purdue use him as, like, a legit receiver? Because he was not just, like, a gadget. Like, they would just put him out as an X receiver and let him, like, just run actual routes. He wasn't the best receiver ever, clearly.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised they didn't use him more as a receiver at Purdue.
Yeah, so that's a part of his game. And I say that is, like, a huge positive part of his game. Let's talk about some numbers because I love me some numbers, especially with running backs. So this is among draft eligible running backs with 60 carries. He was first. I love this stat. Talking about it all the time. He was first. I crapped myself. Not like if the Giants were to draft Drake May. I crapped myself when I saw this. I shit my pants. First in yards after contact per attempt. First out of everybody. With at least 60 carries. 10th in breakaway rate, 17th in missed tackles forced, one more than Trey Benson, by the way. Trey Benson got a lot of carries. So guess what? Tyrone Tracy didn't get a lot of carries. He only got 114 touches. There were 15 draft eligible running backs that got 180 plus. And 17th in missed tackles forced, that's pretty good. Well, guess what? In rate, which we like rates around here, top five in missed tackles forced rate-wise, he was second in Big Ten kick return yards. Hey, there's new kickoff rules this year. Whoa, this guy's going
to
be a special teamer.
I
actually think that's pretty valuable. He led the Big Ten in yards per carry, and this is from Doug Analytics. His favorite stat about the Giants' fifth-round pick, Tyrone Tracy Jr., 0.18 broken tackles per touch. That was third in this class. He only had one career fumble, none in 2023. Brugler had a fourth round grade on him. The consensus had him at 148. So he went right around where he was supposed to go. His RAS score, 9.78 versus Trey Benson, who I would have been happy with at pick 70.
My running back one.
9.76. So honestly, like, part of this is, yeah, he's a Giant and I'm going to like you more when you're a Giant. The excitement that I did get when I watched a guy like Trey Benson with contact balance.
He's not Trey Benson.
I get a similar excitement when I now watch Tyrone Tracy, except you got him two rounds later.
Now, he is old.
He's going to be 25 in November.
It's a very weird situation when you think of an old running back. You're like, oh, what, 800 carries?
Yeah, but you want to know, I don't care about that because number one, he's not going to get a million carries with the Giants. And number two, he barely got any tread in work in college.
He had 113 carries his 1 year playing running back.
This is a situation where, like, yeah, if you get 4-3 good years out of Tyrone Tracy as a running back in the NFL as a special teamer, this fifth round pick is successful.
Oh yeah, so, absolutely. Like it's obviously a lesser standard.
The age is just a number here for me.
What do you think about him? Like, so Devin Singletary is running back one for the Giants right now.
Yeah.
What do you think about him versus Eric Gray, because we liked Eric Gray as a prospect. Mm-hmm. Now they're very different in pros and cons.
One, and I like how they're different.
I think Eric Gray is better at, like I said, dealing with the muddiness, right? When there's stuff, he knows how to make the most out of that, out of those plays. Where Tyrone Tracy, he's more explosive, right? He's the more like, Eric Gray is kind of like a one cut and go.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrone Tracy is the guy who's going to, he's going to juke you. He's going to do spin moves. Like, there was one play in the film breakdown where he spins. Like, he likes to go to that spin move. But Tyrone Tracy has like the breakaway speed that Eric Gray doesn't have. But for early career, this is where, one, Saquon's not here, right? So that was always going to be a hard path for Eric Gray to get on the field. But again, the blocking. With Eric Gray, the blocking was, like, Eric Gray was unplayable after the preseason when you really saw his blocking, right? And we had blocking as a negative on him. With Tyrone Tracy, the blocking, he's not the best blocking back, but you see, like, and I put blocking on the film review if you guys want to watch it. Like, it's like, okay, it's there. Now, the worry, though, is he is 25, right? So is he just a good blocker because he's blocking up, you know, 19, 20-year-old linebackers who aren't NFL linebackers? But it is going to be interesting to see who, like, sets themselves apart as running back, too, because these guys are both fifth-round picks by the same GM. They're both very different players. The RB2 camp battle is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I kind of give the nod to Tracy Jr. for being a little bit more of an impact this year than Eric Gray. I think, hey, here's kind of how I have it envisioned in my head, right? Devin Singletary can be your three-down back, but if there's a series where he needs a spell, if there's a series that you want to keep him on the bench for a little bit, I have Eric Gray as kind of a short yardage guy. If there's a third and two, if there's a third and three, if there's a third and one, fourth down in short, where you want to run the ball, Eric Gray is maybe the guy that you go to get stronger. Those 40 yards.
Tracy's not.
And Tracy, I have as like a change of pace kind of back if you want to get him involved in receiving it. But especially even with a Devin Singletary series, Tracy as a third down back, I think that is his role even from, I'm not going to say day one, but I think that could be his role this year as a third down back.
Yep. All right, Justin, let's finish it off. I can't believe we're finishing it off. Round six, picks 183, the Giants finish off their draft with UCLA linebacker Darius Moasau.
Moasau,
6 foot, 225 pounds, 31-inch arms. 23 years old, Justin. He 5 years of actual playing time, right? Like, yeah. I'll just read you his tackles through from 2019 to 23.
Started at Hawaii, 60, went to UCLA.
102, 108, 91, 75. Like you said, first 3 years were at Hawaii, and then the last 2 years at UCLA. It seems the path for this guy is a special teams player. One, Joe Shane specifically mentioned that Michael Gobriel, through the Giants special teams coordinator, was his special teams coach at Hawaii, and Michael Gobriel was the special teams coordinator at the Shrine Bowl where Darius was at. I also talked to, you know, my friend who's a scout at the Shrine Bowl, and he basically confirmed, like, yeah, he's a special team fly around the guy. But let's talk about him as a linebacker. He is a linebacker who likes to hit, right? If that's what you see with him. He's an okay athlete, but I think he lacks the sideline to sideline area speed, right? And there's times where he's in good position, but he's not able to finish. He just doesn't have that closing burst. But he's strong. He's strong when he has momentum, but he gets bullied when offensive linemen like get into him. He's kind of like your typical like rack up tackles type of linebacker, right? Where he processes solid, he usually gets to the right area, but he's not a playmaker, right? He's not getting downhill and getting ahead of the play. He's just kind of racking up tackles. You know, he will take on offensive linemen, right? He's not one of these linebackers who's afraid to take an offensive lineman, but he's also not shedding them very well. Again, I think he's more of a tackle accumulator than a playmaker. And then in coverage, you kind of can't use him past 8 yards, right? Now, he has these physical reroutes. Like, he likes to hit. There's a play versus Arizona where they're running mesh, and he de-cleats a wide receiver. So you can use him in like that 0 to 7 yard range. But Justin, for a 6th round pick and the way the Giants have talked about him, it seems like this is someone that's like, you know, set up to be a special teams player and a backup linebacker.
And with the new rules, I don't know. Like, I don't know that, you know, there's, you know, conversations.
And we lost Cam Brown, too.
Yeah, and, you know, and there's conversations of, you know, you may see teams take more special teams players. We don't really know what all that is going to look like yet. And even without the new rules, right?
I would rather take a player who is, can give me some type of, like, backup, good backup contribution, and you can coach up on special teams.
Yeah, we literally talked about how Cam Brown and Carter Coughlin were successful draft picks, were taken around this same time. They're successful draft picks because they lasted through their rookie contracts. Carter Coughlin's back, extended. They were successful rookie contracts and successful players, draft picks, because they're special teamers and they stayed here. So I have he's 45th in run stop rate among draft eligible players. He was 8th in average.
You say that like his, anyway.
In average depth of tackle. I don't know. This guy, can I tell you who he reminds me of?
Who does he remind you of?
Harry Carson. Hey, listen to this. 7th highest pass coverage grade by PFF. We love PFF grades around here. Now, here's the thing. Here's the real reason. Here's my theory why that, if you're he's maybe not that good. Here's why I have the theory that he had the 7th highest pass coverage grade by PFF. His average depth of target was very, very low. Like, that's how they had it.
They didn't use him to cover anything past like 8 yards.
He's good at sniffing out screens, which I enjoy hearing how he's a good tackler, because if he's going to be a special teamer, and I even did see this when I was watching him too, he squares guys up well, he uses his shoulder, he wraps up well. If you're going to be on special teams, you kind of need to be a good tackler. It's kind of like a huge part of it. He was 23rd in total stops, which is awesome among draft eligible players, and he was a special teams MVP his rookie year in Hawaii. So, duh. Great
again,
pick.
with Michael Gabriel.
Great pick.
Here's the thing. I would have liked Mekhi Wingo, who went a few picks later.
Well,
who
you're wrong.
Is a potential defensive tackle spot.
You're so wrong.
So, that is your 2024 New York Giants draft recap. We went Malik Nabers, Tyler Newbin, Andrew Phillips, Theo Johnson, Tyrone Tracy Jr., and Darius Mwaso. Very fun draft this year, Justin. We streamed for, you know, what?
Usually it's 17 hours.
17 hours, you know, all the draft preview pods, all the film breakdowns. It's been a lot of fun. And we're not done
yet. We're not done.
More film breakdowns to come. Our offensive undrafted free agent episode Thursday, defensive undrafted free agent episode the Monday a week from now.
A huge mailbag.
Mailbag. So we go all plus in. Interviews. Like a lot of, I won't even say a lot. We, over this next 2 months, like to make our episodes a little different and not just talk about quarterback over and over again. And I don't know how people do it. I really don't. Yeah. We'll talk about it, but, you know, like when we do interviews, we'll get the, you know, let's get the Daniel Jones question out of the way. Now let's actually talk about this team. So we'll talk about it all. But I also end these because we do put a lot of work in this as a thank you, because it wouldn't matter if you guys didn't watch, right? So you guys watch the streams, you guys watch the podcast, yeah. Even if you just, you know, follow on Twitter and listen to a few episodes a year. Like, you guys make these worth it, right? And I always, it always feels a little special finishing this episode because so much work goes into it, and then it's just like over.
Yeah.
So it's a weird feeling at the end of
but
it.
But it's not over, man. And, you know, now's the countdown to camp. But we're going to be working and we'll be grinding before then. But really, thank you.
Very serious thank you. Like, not even, like, it's a very serious thank you.
We're not here and doing this. And, you know, hey, it's 11 o'clock at night on Sunday night. And we're enjoying talking about this football team. And we're doing it because all of you allow us to do it. And, you know, I think Bobby's getting, you know, Bobby sometimes may get a little mad and frustrated with me because I'm pretty data and analytic driven when it comes to this content thing now, because I'm trying to figure out, well, what do we do? What should we be focusing on? And, you know, how can we make it work? And how can we make it work even faster? If there's one thing that I've seen, we have numbers on this, that I think Talkin' Giants has the strongest community base out of anybody at John, out of any property, any show at John Boy Media. And there's literally numbers to back up.
It's Talkin' Giants versus the world.
Talkin' Giants versus the world. And so that, thank you for that.
And that is a true saying. Also, I will say, just we were 5 for 5 on the first 5 picks of having write-ups.
Dude.
Which day 3 is like, okay, we're just going to have, like, it's going to suck. We're going to post the highlight video.
So
and
great.
We're going to have to wait until this thing is over. So we were 5 for 5. We didn't have a write-up on Darius.
This is why Joe Shane.
Moasau.
This is why Joe Shane needs to work. I think we're finally understanding.
Yeah, we're figuring out the guys that he likes, and
we're finally getting a read on where what he might do and where he might go, and his types. I will say that in terms of types, though, he kind of drafted a little older this draft class. Next year's draft class,
yeah, you can't do the whole he's older type of thing.
No, I mean Malik Nabers, there wasn't even a guy that was 21. Malik Nabers is 20. He's turning, I said June, by the way. He's turning 21 in July, so that was correct.
Next year we're previewing all the oldest players at each position.
That was correct. That was incorrect information I said earlier. But I mean, I'd be interested to see next year if he gets back to that younger trend, because I think next year's draft class, we're finally going to stop with these guys that have been at school for 6-7 years because of the COVID year. So we'll see.
Yep. So we truly do appreciate you guys very much. Thank you. I'm heading back to Florida today. I'll see you in a few weeks. We're going to be coming up for the softball.
Oh, I need to mentally prepare for that.
So appreciate you guys. Stick with us through the rest of the off season. We'll, you know, camp will be right around the corner. Rookie mini camp, OTA, all that good stuff. Truly do appreciate you guys so much. And we still got the UDFA episodes, just sickos. We will see you then. Until then, let's go Big Blue.
Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.